great conversations continue now on The Maggie Linton Show.
Welcome back. Suicide is something that affects a whole family, especially those left behind. Here to talk about the rising epidemic and healing is blogger, author, and mother Diana Bonney. She's founder of livingonthefaultlines.com. Diana's husband committed suicide. Welcome, Diana.
Hi, Maggie. Thanks so much for having me on.
Well, I thank you so much for calling because this is something that we definitely need to talk about. But talk about your life in general, because I looked at, you know, when I met you, I said, what a beautiful woman. And when you told me what you were there for, I'm going, well, okay, you're still living, you're up and going ahead with your life. So begin with your husband, though.
Well, you know, I had a very pretty shiny life on the outside, and unfortunately on the inside, we were dealing with some alcoholism and things that were going on, and he got himself into situations and made some choices that unfortunately I think led him to believe that there was no other option. So back in 2010, he did take his life, and it was very shocking for me. I have three children who at the time were 12, 15, and 16. And as a mother, you know, the legacy and the aftermath of suicide are very, very frightening, and the statistics are not good. You know, at the moment, it is taking more lives than war, murder, and natural disaster combined. And the people who are in that aftermath, the statistics for children supposedly are that they're six times more likely to, you know, then go on and commit the same act. So for me, it became kind of an exploration into how can I make this better and create a healthier legacy for my own children.
And as you look toward that healthier legacy, you have to be the person who is helping lift them up because you need to be there to explain what happened to them.
You do. You do. And, you know, the inspiration for part of this, I met a gentleman about a week after my husband died, and he was about 55, and we were acquaintances, and he had heard what happened. So we went out, and I told him my story, and he looked at me and got very misty-eyed, and he said, you know, Diana, I have never told anyone this before, but my father committed suicide when I was 13, and my mother forbade me from ever speaking of it or him again. And then he collapsed on me and cried and cried. And I realized, you know, that I was holding the 13-year-old boy and that this was the potential future for my children. So for me, I really began to start speaking to people openly and, you know, at that event I met you at, Maggie.
Mm-hmm.
I can't even tell you how many people I met who said my mother, my father, my brother committed suicide, and we've never talked about it. It's a really interesting population of people out there, and it's invisible, who have this in their life. And everywhere I go, if I ask people who has been touched by suicide, 75-80% of the room will raise their hand. So, you know, it's really something. I think we have to look at how we can redesign our approach to thinking about suicide and center more on the human element and the needs of the people who are affected by it. You know, to try and open it up for discussion, because I think just like homosexuality and cancer and things we didn't discuss 20 years ago, I really believe suicide is up for kind of an evolutionary change, and it's time to bring it out in the open. And particularly with, you know, Robin Williams opened a huge door, you know, tragic, but hopefully, you know, it will begin to create momentum here for people.
Right. If there's anybody that wants to join in this conversation, you're certainly welcome to. The number is 866-801-8255. Once again, 866-801-8255. Did you see any signs? Because people say, oh, there may have been signs. So often we see depression as mm-hmm. one of those signs when people can't seem to lift themselves up or pull themselves out. But was your husband exhibiting any of those signs?
No, you know, his situation really was that he had gotten himself into a troubling position, really, and it all kind of came down in a matter of 10 days. It was discovered there was infidelity, there was some financial stuff and things, and it really just kind of, in a snap of a finger, it fell apart, and I don't think he saw a way out. You know, I didn't see signs, but I think people do look back. I've met numerous people who, you know, they think back and start going, oh yeah, I think I did. I probably could have seen that. But I've spoken to people who think about suicide, and they've said, I have actually attempted suicide, and they've said, you know, it was the best day of my life. I was so happy. And yet for some reason, there was some trigger that caused them to go. So I think it's very difficult to predict.
Yeah. Right after we had Robin Williams' suicide, we had a young man on here, and he was talking about how he had been in the depths of depression and had almost taken his life. And just a call from his brother, it's what shook him out of it. And his brother reminded him, you have something you need to do today. Go do that. And once he made that step out of the house, away from his depressant patterns, he was able to get on. Stacy Young is his name. Stacy was able to move on with his life.
Mm-hmm.
And finding that help, that one person who will listen to you sometimes, can make such a big difference.
Oh, absolutely. It's so important for people to understand that it isn't. I met a young man at the event where we met, and he was kind of in a similar situation. And I think it does just take that one person who makes a connection. And we're so, our society today, for all of our connection and our internet and, wireless connectivity, we are really so disconnected and disenfranchised in terms of actual human connection and intimacy. And I don't think people really realize the depth of it. And when you look at the numbers of suicide and how it's, going up and up and up, I don't think that, it's obviously mysterious, but I do think, maybe it correlates to this society where we have become so disconnected.
Yeah. You also have to go through a grieving process that is necessary for getting on with your life, too.
Mm-hmm. You do. And I really, for me, I think it's very important for people to understand with suicide a couple things. Number one, it creates a huge void. It just punches a hole in your life. And I think how a lot of people deal with it is they step into just simply coping with what's happening rather than giving themselves permission to actively engage in the healing process and cultivate what's going to go back into that void. Instead of allowing shame and fear and blame to fill it up, you need to be very proactive in saying, okay, this event happened, and how am I going to let it shape the future, or how am I going to shape the future? And then, the second thing is that it, on the other hand, kind of like a landslide. It literally comes across your life. It freezes that moment in time. And for a lot of people, they never, ever leave it. They just live around it. They climb over it. But nobody ever sort of goes in and does the excavation and takes out, the pieces that are salvageable and then, create a new life out of that. So it's like learning a new skill. It really is. Your entire life changes. And I think if we could really learn to be present with ourselves, with the discomfort of these emotions that it brings up, you expand, you increase your ability to live and to help your children live better.
Right. Once again, we're talking with blogger, author, and mother, Diana Bonney. She is founder of livingonthefaultlines.com. You mentioned something that I was going to bring up, which is blame. There are some people who will look at you as if you are to blame or part blame for also your husband taking his life. And you had, in a sense, nothing to do with it whatsoever.
Yeah, I think it's a very common experience because, unfortunately, suicide does this interesting thing. There, murder, you have a villain. Disease, you have a villain, in a sense. With suicide, you don't. The person that took their life becomes, in essence, the villain. And so people in the aftermath get caught between this sort of interesting thing. You're caught between, did I do something to cause this? Or was there something I could have done to stop it? And those are very uncomfortable things to contemplate. And so a lot of times, the easiest thing to do is find a scapegoat and discharge those emotions. And, if you go on the suicide talk boards, if you go to support groups, blame is probably one of the number one problems in the aftermath of suicide, which is why I think it's very important to, establish your own presence and center in the middle of the experience, because you can't let that drive the rest of your life.
All right. We're going to take a quick break. When we return, we're going to continue with Diana Bonney. She's going to give you some coping mechanisms to get on with your life and also with your children. And don't forget, folks, you can give us a call at 866-801-8255. Once again, that's 866-801-8255. We'll be right back with Diana Bonney in just a moment.
featuring guests that highlight everyday life. You are listening to The Maggie Linton Show on SiriusXM Urban View. And now, let's join Maggie Linton on SiriusXM Urban View.
Welcome back. We continue with blogger, author, and mother, Diana Bonney, founder of livingonthefaultlines.com. We're discussing getting over the trauma of suicide, especially if you have children and a mother. One of the things you've talked about a couple of times, though, Diana, is that your husband was an alcoholic. And you wonder why you stayed. Is there something you can do that you can help your mate get to it? But we all know with anything, they have to be ready to do that themselves.
Mm-hmm. That is very true. You know, unfortunately...
Oh, we just lost her. Okay, we'll get her back on in just a moment. Once again, Diana, you wonderful blog she has. It's called livingonthefaultlines.com, and highly recommended for anyone who's dealing with any kind of trauma in their lives or having other issues and problems. So definitely want to talk about that. Okay, we've got you back on, Diana.
Sorry about that.
Yeah, that's all right. No
that's
problem.
unfortunately, I think with the alcoholism, it is something that is a personal choice, and I tried very hard to get my husband into rehab and, you know, begged him for the sake of our children and everything else, but I think it's ultimately it comes down to the individual. And one thing that was very, very difficult for me to learn was, you know, that it was up to him. It really wasn't up to me. And I think we all know people who have been in and out of rehab numerous times, and until they hit the bottom and make that decision, nothing's going to change. But I think we're all, it's hope. You know, you always have hope, and you always think it's going to change. And I clung to the promises, and I clung too long, unfortunately. And here we are.
Yeah. Well, I was going to say you have definitely turned the corner and gone to the more positive side. You say there are three essentials for healing after trauma. And I guess part of it is also letting go, but explain what they are.
Well, letting go is huge because I think that unresolved trauma really erodes and deflates the soul. These things don't go away. So whether it's alcoholism or suicide or any of these, you know, things that our current culture is dealing with, they don't go away. And for me, one of the biggest things that has helped me and my children is, number one, really giving ourselves permission to explore this and to be open and honest about it. I think a lot of times it's so scary to talk about this stuff. I mean, the fear surrounding suicide is just unbelievable. But really, in the beginning, I said to them, we need to talk about this openly. And if you have questions, I may not be able to answer them. And I will help you find the answers. And, you know, they're going to be answering those questions for the rest of their lives. But that permission is huge. And then I think second is self-care, really, really engaging and taking care of yourself, eating well, finding things that give you joy so that you can start creating pockets within this heavy, dense energy and allow you to start, you know, coming out of the trauma. And writing, obviously, is huge for me. I'm a big proponent of healing by writing, whether it's journal keeping, whether it's just purging negative energy onto the page. You know, writing a blog and a book simultaneously have been incredibly expansive for me because I've seen things that I really wouldn't have seen had I not been engaging in that. And I think another thing for people who are going through this is meditation, because meditation really helps you learn to be present within yourself and aligns you with who you are. And when you're going through something as traumatic as a suicide, I think one of the most important things you can do is anchor yourself, you know, really solidly in who you are and what this experience is going to be for you so that you can go forward and not, you know, be anchored to suffering and the past.
You know, one of the things that you said early on when you talked to the gentleman who dad had committed suicide when he was 13. Mm-hmm. And so many people hold things in, and how important it is to have someone to talk to. And mm-hmm. if you're that friend, that partner, whoever is out there, just keeping an open ear and a little some compassion can make such a big difference.
Right, and not feeling like you have to solve the problem. I think a lot of people get scared away from talking to people. I mean, suicide, people just sort of disappear because right. they're so uncomfortable. And I think where that comes from is people feel like they have to provide a solution and they have to, fix the problem. And really what people want in the aftermath is just somebody to listen and be able to speak without being judged and be able to, talk about what's happening with them without, feeling like they've got to protect the other person. And unfortunately, we're not very good at that in society. And I've spoken with a lot of people in the aftermath who have gone to support groups and they've done therapy. And it's really, really important to find what works for you. And maybe it's a friend or maybe it's therapy or maybe it's a support group, but really find that channel where you can be constantly, letting those feelings out and exploring them so that they don't just sit in the corner and become, rage and anger and everything else that can happen.
The other thing is, I'm going back to young people who, because they're on the wrong end of bullying and things like that, and mm-hmm. they can think that there is absolutely nothing to live for in this life. Getting to them early also, there may be signs of withdrawal and things along those lines that are so important for parents to pay attention to.
Absolutely. And really just giving them, the voice and the permission. I think I asked my children over the summer, we were talking about what worked, what were the things that really empowered you? And all three of them said, the best thing that I did was to give them permission to speak openly and to ask questions and talk about it. And, I never judged them. I never demonized their father. I'm letting them find their way to their peace, about this with him. And I think that's important for people, but we get scared, and particularly parents, because we feel like we're supposed to have the answers. And as a mother, all I wanted to do was stop their pain. But I had to come to terms with the fact that I couldn't, that I had to let their pain process and that they were going to have to find their way to it. But we can support them in that. We really can't.
Yeah. I have to tell you, you have a... On your blog, you were talking about your daughter turning 21 and her mm-hmm. thinking she was old.
Yeah.
And getting older is something that some people have problems coping with. I'm thrilled to get a new birthday every single time because I think of the option. And mm-hmm. so, there's always something. I'm a, half full to three quarters full glass person, too. So that makes such mm-hmm. a big difference. But you were saying you had also had those thoughts when you were 21. Life is over.
I think my parents seemed very old to me when I was 21, and I think I remember looking at that, generation. And I look at myself now at 51, and I think of my mother who had kind of, I don't want to say given up, but she just was living in a space that this was all there was, and that she couldn't change, and that, this was it. And so I agree with you. I mean, glass is half full for sure. And I love getting older. I love the wisdom. I don't really like, some of the physical things are a little troubling, but I do think it's funny when you do, these kids who look at us and think, oh, wow, I don't want to be in a nursing home or I don't want to be in that, which none of us do either, but it's just part of life. And I think, part of this, what we're talking about is, really curating and cultivating your life when you go through these traumas so that when you get to the older stages, your spirit is clean and your spirit has been the traumas have been integrated so that you can live well and you are whole.
Yeah. Once again, we're talking with blogger, author, and mother, Diana Bonney. She's founder of livingonthefaultlines.com. And I guess that's the title of your book that's going to be coming out next year.
It's a working title, and it mm-hmm. may be. We have a couple things we're playing around with, but that may be just because it so metaphorically, works for what I'm talking about. But yeah, the book is being edited right now, so we will see. Very exciting. Yeah.
And your positive thoughts of you are not powerless. You're powerful in moving your life forward too.
Very. I think that we all have a lot more power than we realize. And unfortunately, most of us live at the mercy of, you know, external experiences like suicide or divorce or, you know, these things that happen in life, thinking that, you know, this is happening to me, why does this happen to me, thinking they have, you know, no choice in it, no power. But, you know, the reality is we really do. If you can always be looking at something and ask, what's the lesson, what can I learn here, there's a tremendous amount of wisdom in that. And I have found with this experience, you know, and the people that I've met, that you can make change. You know, it doesn't have to be the defining moment where everything else, you know, just cycles out of it in a negative way. I do think we have,
It's just basically being in charge of our lives and also making sure that our children are aware that they also have the power to make the right choices.
Right. And empowering them, you know, really to be okay with feeling emotions. I mean, I think you and I grew up, you know, in this time when it was, you had to be a nice girl and you didn't talk about certain things. And don't, you know, my mom was always saying, you know, don't act that way. You know, that's not ladylike. And, you know, really what we need to do is give these kids, especially with all the bullying going on, because mm-hmm. there's so much of this, you know, really empower them to explore who they are at a very young age. I mean, I think, you know, as far as self-esteem and everything goes, rather than constantly trying to be someone else, like the media, you know, is portraying to us, really, you know, living as you are from a very young age. I wish I could have figured this out when I was 21, looking at my mother, thinking she was old. If I had, you know, had these lessons back then, maybe I wouldn't have ended up, you know, where I am. But I do think there's a lot more power in people than they realize.
Yeah, well, you know, I was getting ready to say you're in just the right place where you need to be right now because you are reaching out to help others. And if you hadn't have had the trauma that you had, then you wouldn't be able to help us in the same sort of way. And you are definitely a voice of reasoning and also are putting it out there as a place for people to go and find help and encouraging them to do that.
Yes, absolutely. I feel, you know, strange to say this, but I feel very, very blessed that all of this happened in a way because I am so, I love helping people. I really enjoy, you know, trying to sort of get to the root of these things. And I do think it's an important topic right now. I mean, I, you know, never would have thought 4 years ago that I would be doing this, but, you know, the universe kind of puts you on this path. And I do think there just needs to be a new conversation around it, around suicide, around healing, around, you know, making different choices in the way we speak about it and think about it so that the people who are thinking about it, you know, can get the help they need and the people who are in the aftermath can get the help they need and live better lives.
Yeah, getting the mental health and all anyone into the right frame of mind is so very important. Listen, wonderful chatting with you. Once again, it is blogger, author, and mother, Diana Bonney. She is a founder of Living on the Fault Lines. More at her website, livingonthefaultlines.com. And she has a wonderful blog, highly recommended for all people, just to go in and look and just be uplifted. She's also on Facebook, and she tweets at Diana Bonney. And the last name is Bonny, Diana Bonney. Thank you, Diana. Nice chatting with you.
Thanks, Maggie. I really appreciate it. Thank you.
Uh-huh. And continued happiness.
Oh, you too. Thanks so much.
All right. Thanks also to my other guests, David Ricklin, Nicholas Sparks. Don't forget his movie opens up on Friday. It is The Best of Me. Really it was a great book, but a little bit of a tearjerker, as so many of Nicholas's books are. And also Dr. Marianne Cooper. All contact information pasted on my Facebook page. Also, my new website, maggielinton.com, is highly recommended for any of our previous guests and also their contact information. Tomorrow, our colleague and friend, singer and entertainer Deborah Bond, journalist Sandra Long Weaver with her new venture, Tea and Conversation, author Peyton Marshall, and Olympic gold medalist Simone Biles. Many thanks to producers Adele Coleman-Williams and also Tony Fowler, though Adele's MIA, and Ashley McDonough. Until next time, seek peace and spread lots of love. I'm Maggie Linton.